This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour three rolling along this morning, and a good Wednesday to you. Hey, don't forget Throwback Thursday tomorrow. We'll also be talking Houston Texans to wrap up AFC South Week. Had a good conversation last hour with Caroline Fenton of the game in Nashville and the Titans. We were talking about, okay, look, in the end, larger picture, we can get into the nitty-gritty details of the team, but here's basically this. It's a loaded conference. How do they fit in a loaded conference despite a 12-win season last year and the playoffs running through Nashville would last to 10 seconds because Cincinnati came in on their first up in the Titans' first playoff game and knocked them out. It does go to show you, though, and I know we talk about this a lot, but as we get closer and closer to the season, let's really take a look at this. It is going to be a really fun AFC. It is really going to be interesting because, again, you could be in a position where it's not going to feel like, again, college football where you lose two games and you feel like you're out of it. That's not what I'm getting at. But there is going to be a sense of urgency with teams, even with an extra playoff game, even with an extra playoff team, I should say, even though they're going to three wild cards. There's a little sense of urgency that you can't give away a game or two here or there if you're going to be in a divisional battle. Look at the West, for example. The West is so loaded that if all of those teams play to what their potential is, and we know probably one of them won't, somebody will have an off year, but let's just say for the sake of argument, everybody in the West plays the way they're capable of playing, which is, look, they got all these good quarterbacks and good defenses and good coaches and all of the things that make those teams good. If they all are playing up to the potential, you can't throw away a game to the Texans. You can't throw away a game to Jacksonville. You can't throw away a game to the Jets. You can't throw away a game to the Steelers, who may have a rookie quarterback. You better be careful every single week, because if you don't win the division and you don't get that guaranteed spot, you're in the running for three wildcard spots, and there might be six teams that are hanging around, breathing down your neck for that position late in the year. So I think the AFC could be really fun. When we look back on who didn't make it and who did make it, I think you're going to find some really good football teams going, my goodness, what did it take to make the playoffs? That's my thought right now. We'll see how it plays out, but it does go to show you that even a team that is coming off a 12-win season with Derrick Henry running the football, as well as coaches they are, we're still like, I don't know. I don't know where they are in the eliteness of this conference. That's how good it's going to be in the AFC this year.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So it's again tomorrow, the Texans and Lovie Smith, and who went 4-13 last year. We'll talk about Davis Mills, their quarterback. Talked about this at the top of the hour. So the AFC should be fun. I'm sorry, if you're an NFC fan, boo, boring. Boring. What am I going to watch in the NFC that's exciting? The Justin Fields year two? Trey Lance year two? Dak Prescott and the Cowboys finding a way not to go to the Super Bowl? More Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? Is that what we're doing? Let's watch the Falcons reload. Ugh. Will the Saints win 10 games with Jameis Winston and Dennis Allen guiding them? Will the Minnesota Vikings disappoint in mediocrity again? Sean McVay and his coaching tree? I mean, what do I got in the NFC that's thrilling? Like, the Green Bay Packers are going to win the North by default. Like, they're just going to show up and play some games and go, where's the playoffs beginning for us? This division is too easy. Please find us a worthy opponent to challenge us in the division. One team's rebuilding, the other one with a second-year quarterback, and the other one, well, they just don't do anything any year. Every year we talk about how good the Vikings are going to be. Every year. Oh, they got this, they got this, they got this. Show me the Vikings' successful season. Show me the one year they were like, didn't they play in the NFC Championship game not that long ago? I don't even remember.
Did right? They? Yeah, they did, right?
They did.
Because they got that Minnesota miracle.
Yeah. Totally forgot about it.
Totally.
Totally forgot about it. Sorry. I mean, I'm not meaning to crap all over your accomplishment, but yeah, boring. It's like the Atlanta Falcons. As D. Orlando Ledbetter told us last week, right? Remember, after the Super Bowl, they still went to the playoffs and they went to Philadelphia and lost a close game to the Eagles, and the Eagles went on to the Super Bowl. But you forget about it because it's just lumped in with, I didn't remember. I don't even know what you did. I don't even care. You lost a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, and I haven't seen you in the game since. Right? No matter what you do, you set this bar up and then you disappear. The Vikings haven't been to the Super Bowl since, what, the 70s? And yet every year I'm like, oh, it's a pretty good team. Really? Because I don't see them anywhere doing anything except, again,
ever.
The one NFC title game appearance I totally forgot about.
Which, in that game, they got totally blown out.
Yeah, right.
They weren't I don't know what the final score was, but I just remember them not really being a part of it.
Yeah. Like, so again, the Packers just roll out, win the division.
Have you have you taken a look at the Packers' schedule?
I have not. Is it
the NFL?
Fun?
The NFL, I think, wants the Packers to cruise to the playoffs
because they. How do they line them up?
Well, first of all, one thing I noticed right off the bat is that their bye week is week 14.
Oh, wonderful!
So they get a late bye week.
That's great.
And, get nice and well-rested for the home stretch. I'm looking at this.
Yeah, because it's not a stretch when a coach says, yeah, I think I would like the rest late in the season rather than in week two.
Yeah.
Right? Whenever the earliest the bye weeks kick in, right? Whatever that week is. They're like, we'd rather have it, I don't know, in December than we'd rather have it in, early October.
Now, I'm looking at their schedule. I'm counting four, maybe five tough opponents for them.
Yeah, they got the Bills, I know.
They got the Bills, and that's at Buffalo October 30th. That's a Sunday nighter. That's going to be a fun, fun game.
Right.
They're playing at Tampa in week three.
That's tough.
That could be tough. Dallas, maybe.
Maybe. They got it at home, though, right?
It's Dallas at home, but then that's followed up by Tennessee on a short week at home.
Oh, okay.
So, that's a tough stretch. The only other game that I'm looking at that could be tough for them is the Rams, a Monday Night Football game in December, but at Green Bay. So you're taking the L.A. boys and having them play in the snow.
So they get the Jets because they're playing the AFC East.
Yep.
They get two teams in their division that are kind of
three.
Three. I never want to blow them off because divisional games are tough.
Yeah, I know, but right? Not that division.
Not that division. I know. Listen, Robert in Detroit will say the Lions did beat the Packers at the end of the season.
No, they're also playing the NFC East.
Right, so they're getting the Giants.
They get the Giants. Right. They get the Commanders.
You got the Commanders and the Eagles made the playoffs, but I don't think they're like a 13-win team.
No, they're not. That's not a threat team, right?
Yeah,
you just don't feel that way. So yeah, I mean, and then with the Week 14 bye,
right? Beautiful Week 14 bye. Beautiful. That is beautiful.
That's when you want it, right? You want it like in the 11, 12, 13, 14 frames, like late in the season. Hey, all of our guys need a rest.
Like it's
because that's our midpoint of the season.
Even though the Steelers are in a quarterback situation, right, where they're figuring out who their quarterback's going to be, like that division, if Deshaun Watson does play, that division is going to be interesting, really interesting. All like the Ravens, if they're healthy, and the Bengals are coming off a Super Bowl, and the Browns have got a Pro Bowl level quarterback, and if he does get on the field, they'll be a threat. And the Steelers are still got a good defense and might steal some games that they probably shouldn't. Right? Go to the NFC. I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but go to the NFC. And outside of two ancient quarterbacks, who's the defending Super Bowl champs? What's sexy about the NFC right now?
Who's the threat?
Right? And I wouldn't even put the Rams as like an upper echelon team. They might be, but sometimes maybe they caught lightning in a bottle. Listen, I don't know.
Here's the deal, right? We're all in agreement that the AFC West is probably the toughest division this
Without
year.
Without question.
If Deshaun Watson is able to play, how far behind is AFC North?
Absolutely. If Deshaun Watson is coming back in week seven, right, all of a sudden the Browns are getting a healthy, fresh, Pro Bowl-level quarterback in a division that is loaded with talent.
And that's enough time?
Yeah.
Even if they went 1-6.
Sure it is.
If they went 1-6, Deshaun Watson is that X factor that could turn that team around.
Without question. Without question. We might find him despicable for his actions, but he's still a solid football player. And yet, again, Dallas should win easily. Green Bay should win their division easily. I think the Rams should win easily. I don't think Arizona is giving a fight. Tampa should win it in their sleep.
There's your four division winners.
I mean, what are we talking about with this thing? Like I said at the top of the hour, you go to the AFC, right? And let's say you're, I don't know, just give me a team and the Patriots, right? All right, so the Patriots, maybe they're not Bills good, but they're winning enough games. And then all of a sudden, whoops, oh my God, we lost to the Jets. Whoa. Why? How did that happen? You better be careful, because that one loss could set you back in a three-team wild card race. My God, they're begging teams. They're like, here, make the playoffs. We don't care. And yet the AFC could be like, I can't believe we're not going. I can't believe we're not getting in.
We've been doing the AFC South, and we know that it's a two-horse race.
Two-horse race, right.
We know that. But it's not out of the ordinary to think, like, you know, what if Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence figure it out?
Yeah, what if they go on a four-game win streak, and you're like, oh, my God, what's going on here? Yeah.
And, you know, those four games came against division opponents, because that's all you need.
Well, and again, if Mark Long is correct from earlier this week and Jacksonville's a tough out, they might steal some games that they shouldn't. And all of a sudden you're like, hey, listen, we might be getting the midway point where it's like, hey, Jacksonville's not officially eliminated to this. And teams could, you'll be playing them going, my God, what a better team than they were in their debacle season last year. Again, I think it's going to be so much fun to watch teams go up and down the power rankings of that conference. I think it's going to be really fun to see. All right, but, Miami Dolphins, here you go. What exactly is going on with the connection between Tua and Tyreek Hill and Jaden Waddle?
You know, brilliant. If you're new to our program, every Tuesday we do a top five, bottom five.
That's right.
Last year's bottom five got really boring quickly.
It was like a Wheel of Fortune giving you all those letters in the bonus round. We were just taking the same five teams and going, hey, mix them up. Can we pick somebody else?
This 32 team, I'm putting him at 28 this week. Yeah,
we started putting teams in there that just disappointed us.
Oh, my God.
Instead of teams with like lousy records that were staying consistent lousy.
I think we put teams that made the playoffs in our bottom five just because we haven't talked about this team and we want to talk about them.
So this is going to be so fun.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a bunch of teams that we could talk about in the bottom five. I don't want it to be the same three that were consistently there all season long last year.
And I kid you not, I would have said the same thing if I based this show out of Boston or Tampa or any other places I've lived in the past. I think the Titans today I think they're an interesting case study. I think it's not just because I live in Nashville and I'm a little bit more familiar with this team, but I think they're like we talked about last hour. Can you win a Super Bowl? Can you get through the landmines of the AFC with running the ball with Derrick Henry and playing good defense? Yeah. Is that a good enough formula to go through everybody in the AFC that you're going to have to go through to make the Super Bowl?
I mean,
now again, take the one game tournament thing out. Just go philosophy to philosophy. Because like I was telling Caroline last hour, I think fans see Buffalo, Kansas City last year and went, well, our team better be able to do that. Score in 8 seconds, right? Score three touchdowns in the final 2 minutes of a game. I think people think that that's what it is. And the Titans, if the Titans were in that game, maybe the way they play doesn't put Kansas City or Buffalo in a position to strike that quickly. But at the same time, if the Titans had to do that, there's no way in hell they get through that game. There is no way the Tennessee Titans score in a minute and a half. You know what I mean? What was it? 13 seconds to put them in field goal range?
Yeah.
Not a chance. Not this team, not a chance. Not without A.J. Brown that can get you yards after the catch. I don't know. Maybe Treylon Burks is the answer. I don't know. But that's not the formula that they play football. And they may not need it. They may not need it. But look at what's going on in the AFC. And you're telling me this older schoolish philosophy might play. The NFL has basically told teams with good defenses, good luck. Good luck, because we've orchestrated everything around dynamic offenses. You can't breathe on guys anymore, and that's the way we want it. And if you're still believing that there is a grounded down in the trenches, run the ball, clock, defense, etc., it still might work, but I don't know if I'd gamble on it. I don't know if I'd bet on the Titans to win it. Right? I don't know. That's the thing I'm kind of wondering. Because the Titans are coming at the AFC with a you know what we're going to do. Try to stop the tank, right? But at the same time, remember, he was out nine games. It's over half the season. And the Titans still found ways to win a game. I will never forget that night, the day when Derrick Henry got hurt, and they were going to Los Angeles to play the Rams, and I thought they would get clobbered. Absolutely clobbered. And they won that game. They clobbered them. And it was... I was like, this is incredible. This is coaching. Mike Vrabel has got this team believing, like, even without Derrick Henry, and we know he's a star, but even without him, we can still win these games. I still don't know if it's a formula. It's fascinating because we'll see it play out this season. It's fascinating. All right, I do want to get to golf because one of the most hated guys in the sport has got a lawsuit against Golf Channel. Jason Sobel on Twitter made a very good point. He's not going to win this thing, but if he does, it could change the way athletes and media coexist. We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Your thoughts on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. And please, use two N's, because if you send it to the wrong one, he doesn't get to see your birthday messages. Happy birthday, Ron Culver! Well done. So, I don't know. Do you get excited for birthdays still?
No.
No, no.
I guess the big ones. I mean, this one's just a generic number that's out there, so yeah, it's not really, yeah. It's like, eh.
Eh. No, yeah. I got you.
I'm excited for, you know, because my kids are excited. So I get excited for that.
You get excited because your kids are excited for your birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, because it kind of brings the summer to a close. That's what my birthday has done
now.
Yeah,
mine too.
Like,
I have the early August, and it's like, all right, school is now in full swing.
Yeah, I mean, literally today, like I said earlier, today's the first day of school. Yeah. Which, by the way, all three of my kids are starting a new school. Like, it's all milestones for them.
That's very good. That's very cool.
My youngest started in kindergarten, the middle one's junior high, and the other one's high school.
That's awesome. Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? What's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is your reaction time slows way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. All right, so Patrick Reed, one of the most hated golfers? I don't want to say hated. That seems like a strong term. And given this lawsuit, I better be careful. Patrick Reed has filed a defamation lawsuit against Golf Channel and commentator Brandel Chambly. I mean, he's seeking $750 million. Yeah, okay. And the claim is that because Chambly and the Golf Channel, they've conspired with the PGA Tour to defame Reed since he was a young man emerging on the tour because of misinformation and false reporting on different things and statements that Chambly has made. They tried to destroy his reputation. And because of that, wherever he goes, he gets a hostile treatment. People call him cheater. People call him, you know, because he has not a very good relationship with his parents. He's on the outs with his parents. People have said, where's your parents? Like, they've thrown some real nasty stuff his way as he's trying to play professional golf. Nevertheless, it doesn't look like he's going to win this case based on some early legal and analysis, but you never know. But it's a lot of money, and it would bankrupt the Golf Channel, to be honest with you. I don't know. I mean, I don't know their financials, but it seems like that's a ton of money. But it does create a really, really interesting situation between athletes and the media, because part of Brandel Chambly's job is to analyze. He's like a columnist in a newspaper. And I think there is a difference. People do this a lot where they see, like, somebody writes a column in a newspaper and they go, oh, you call yourself a journalist? No, you call yourself a columnist. The purpose of a column is to write an opinionated piece. Yes, you have to get your facts straight. Don't get me wrong, but it's not a who, what, where, when, and why article, right? It's opinionated piece. Yes, you can't write lies in there, but at the same time, there is a certain thing about writing columns. And I think people mistake the two. And Brandel Chambly is not a reporter. He's not on there to report. He's not on the television to say, and Cam Smith leads the tournament by 2 shots heading into round 3 today at Brave Oak Country Club. No, they don't do. It's not what his job is. His job is to say things like, "Well, when I watched his swing 2 years ago, the angle of impact was like this. If you can see on the telestrator here, he would come at the ball this way. He shallowed out his swing now, and this is causing pushes to the right. And when you got pushes to the right, it's going to create a problem. All of these kind of things. That's what he does. So naturally, when you do that kind of analysis, it sort of creeps into other analysis, right? Off the field behavior." Off on court behavior, things like that. It just sort of balloons into what it is. And Brandel Chambly has been critical of Patrick Reed. Now, Reed has had a history of being accused of cheating going back to his college days. There was even an incident where he grounded his club in a bunker in a PGA Tour event, was penalized a few strokes at the Hero World Challenge. There is, when you have a reputation as a cheater in golf, it does not go away. It's like in any other sport, but in golf, it's really, really bad. It's to be accused of cheating in golf is one of the biggest crimes you could commit as a tour player. I think it would be almost mentally draining for a golfer who has been accused of cheating to try to survive that. It's just something that the sport, its fans, its culture just does not accept. It's so different. Like when I covered NASCAR, that whole, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, that sort of mentality, like teams would always be accused of, we're putting lead tape here and we're putting more weight here, and they get caught and it's like, well, you know, we tried, you know, that's the way it goes here. And people would go, yeah, well, they tried. But in golf, that's not the case. If you try to improve your lie, whatever it may be, put the ball on the green in a slightly different spot, anything, and you get caught for it, your reputation never recovers. It just doesn't recover. It's all.
No, in fact, we forgive athletes in other sports.
Sure, we
like David Ortiz. You know, I mean, he got busted. He got popped for PED usage, and it's like barely even a footnote of his career.
We talked about it with Fernando Tatis, right? Like down the road, 5 years from now,
yeah,
is Fernando? Are we going to go, well, Fernando Tatis has 50 home runs, but remember that one time he took that ringworm medication? I cannot watch him. Golf, it
never
doesn't
will
work.
Happen.
It doesn't work that way. You carry this, and you also add that he's just not a likable person. And I mean this in all. I'm trying to be careful here but you know it and I know it. There are just likable personalities and there are not likable personalities. We see this in entertainment all the time.
And the Padres are stacking them all up.
Right,
right.
They certainly are. I know. They certainly are.
Manny Machado, now Juan Soto.
Exactly. They certainly are.
I don't think people really like Blake Snell. They took
him on
board.
No, I don't think people like him either. Right. And in whether it's a movie or a singer, some people just rub us the wrong way. And Patrick Reed rubs us the wrong way. It's not just the cheating. He's arrogant. He's cocky. He's kind of a beep. I mean, he's all of those things. And he's not likable. He really isn't. I'll tell you this. I know from anonymous people that cover golf that I know, they hated when he won the Masters because it was like, oh my God, we're going to have to deal with him every year at Augusta. Like, it was not a popular win. He's not a popular guy. But let's say he wins this lawsuit. And again, Jason Sobel, who covers golf, says he's not going to win it. But let's say he wins it. Can you imagine the power athletes have now to go after the big, heavy talking heads on TV? Now, some of you may welcome that. I get it. But it's going to change me. It would change media coverage of athletes if they can make a rightful claim that because so-and-so on TV said something, they can't live their life the way they want. It would really, really change everything. It would be not good. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, Robert on Twitter. Detroit, why not? Love the show, Tony. All right, how do we forget the Lions in our... Oh, yeah, you never know with certainty. Yeah, I know. We love the Lions.
How do we forget the Lions?
How do we forget?
It's not that we forgot the Lions. It's just we need to see something first.
Come on, we gotta see them pop some more victories. I did give them credit for beating Green Bay at the end of the season, though.
Yeah, remember, it took it forever for them to get their first win. We kept sitting there like, Dan Campbell's got to do it. We fell in love with Dan Campbell, and he was on a losing streak.
And then he
even tied
the
your team.
We
still love Dan Campbell and the Lions.
Yikes. That's why Mason Rudolph should never start an NFL game ever again. When people tell me, it's a three-way battle between Mitch Trubisky, Mason Rudolph, and Kenny Pickett.
Here's a stat for you.
Really?
You ready for it?
Yes.
Name a quarterback that has never thrown a pick six in his career.
Mason Rudolph?
Mitch Trubisky?
Wow, that might be good. That might be true. That might be good, actually. All right.
How many games does he actually play?
See, even if he's good, you still want the future, right? Like, even if he's decent, you still want the quarterback, the young quarterback, right? Like, well, I don't know. Like, if you're... I'm trying to think of this for a second. Like, it feels like it's inevitable, right? Every time you draft a young quarterback, if you don't start him right away, if you go, well, we're going to put him behind this veteran, it's like inevitable there's some moment in the season where it's like, oh my God, that veteran quarterback just broke his leg in 8 places. And then the rookie comes in, and that's like, it feels like it happens all the time.
It happens all the time, but here's the difference between those situations and your situation. You don't really have a veteran quarterback.
No, you have a journeyman guy that is just trying to land a
job. Hold on to something.
Right, exactly.
And you have Mitch Trubisky. Okay, sorry.
And there doesn't seem to, from what I'm following with the Steelers, I'm sure if I was local, there would probably be more of it, but it's like, is there a big outcry like there was in Chicago? Like, remember when Matt Nagy made Andy Dalton QB1? Everyone was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, stop with this. Justin Fields is your guy. Just get on with it. Is that the feeling in Pittsburgh?
Rip the Band-Aid off. Come on.
Yeah. Like, is that the feeling? I don't know.
I think so. I think it might be because, you know, everyone went over the moon for his preseason performance against a fourth string, maybe even fifth string defense.
Oh, I know. Without a doubt, he threw 2 touchdowns, one with 3 seconds remaining, and everybody's like, oh, here we go. It's like, that's what preseason does.
Now, it's good. I'm glad that he was able to do that.
For no reason, yeah.
You know, I'm glad that you could do that. It shows poise. I mean, he's still going up against professionals, but let's be real. He wasn't going up against the best team, best defense he could face.
No, and that's why it's like... preseason football is so complex because it's, you want so badly to grab something out of it, right? But you have to put so many different variables to what you're seeing. It makes you go, it's like when I hear people tell me all the time, they're like, and I get this all the time when I talk, especially talking to guys who cover camp on a regular basis. Oh, he looks good in camp. Don't they all look good in camp? Like, what do they... Don't they
isn't,
all?
Isn't the rule if you don't look good in camp, you're getting cut?
Pretty much. Like when I talk, if I talk about, let's say, Aaron Rodgers, right? And I'm like, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, how's he look? Right? What's the answer? He looks terrible. Like, it's not, even if he did struggle, like where he's like, I'm just getting some rust out, you wouldn't go, well, this is a big story. We got to follow this upcoming season. Aaron Rodgers is struggling in training. Like, of course we wouldn't do it. So when you're talking about named players that have got some name behind them, not some rookie or somebody you've never heard of that's like a free agent that signed on with the team. I'm talking about some names. And they go, oh, he looked good in camp. That's because camp is designed to make the stars look good. It really is. I'm sorry. It really is. It's designed to make you look decent. Quarterbacks are never getting touched. Running backs don't get tackled that much. I mean, it's not contact-based most of the time. If you cover camp on a regular basis, some of the camps aren't pads. Some of them are pads. It's designed to make you look somewhat decent. Even and preseason games are sort of the same way, right? Preseason games, if your quarterback struggles, it's A, because they didn't care, or B, they were just given some vanilla plays to run through and they went, whatever, and get me out of here. Right? Like, you shouldn't freak out if your star player is struggling. Like, we talked about this yesterday with Tom Brady. Brady's left the team, right? And he's left the team for a while. He's going to deal with the family issue. And I know there are people who want to read more into it. Like, the team told him to go away for a while and, you know, whatever. I don't care until I get some solid reporting from Ben Volin, who I trust completely, when it comes, even though he's in Boston. Until I get like a Pat Donovan who really knows what's going on there, tells me otherwise, I'm just going to assume it's a family matter. Like, I'm dealing with a personal matter. I don't know what it is. It could be he wants to get away from training camp because he hates training camp. It could be Giselle is like, please step away for a while. We need to hash some stuff out. Maybe it's with his marriage. Maybe it's with his kids. Maybe it's with the team. I don't know. But I'm not going to go down the road as saying, what does this mean for the Buccaneers? That's crazy. That's lazy talk. When you start going, well, how does the fact that Tom Brady is not in training camp, how do you think that's going to affect? Not at all. What are you kidding me? Not at all. What, because Brady's not in Nashville this week, joint practicing with the Titans as they get ready for their preseason game on Saturday? I'm supposed to think that in week 7, they're going to be 3-4? Like, if they're 3-4, it's not going to have anything to do with this leave of absence at all. At all. And so but this is the time of year where we want these stories to matter so much. We want some real value to this, and there just isn't there. And I think that's one of the problems. We can't just enjoy this time of just camp, excitement, some news. Yeah, Malcolm Butler being lost in New England is news. Zach Wilson suffering an injury and needing a knee surgery yesterday. Could be out 4 weeks, could miss the start of the season. That's news. But for the most part, let's not make everything news, because everything is not news. It's news that Brady left the team. It's news that Brady left the team and will be gone for a personal matter. Right? Whatever that matter may be. And if it's team related, maybe people should look into why it's team related. If it's family related, it's none of our business. But I think to take that story and then go, let's get way more false value out of this, I don't think it does anybody any good, because it's not going anywhere. It's the Buccaneers are going to win this division going away. Win this division going away. Now, are the Saints going to be a couple of games behind them? Yeah, but I don't think the Saints are going to be a threat. I don't think we're going to be talking about a battle for the NFC South. You've got two teams that are sort of in limbo right now. I think the Panthers could make a playoff run with one of the wild card teams, but we're not sure yet. I think the Falcons are completely rebuilding. They know they're rebuilding. And I think the Saints are a 10-win team that could vie for another wild card spot. But the Buccaneers should win this thing going away. So who cares when Brady comes back for training camp? But again, camps are designed to get work in, but everybody kind of looks good. And even if they don't, there's nothing there. There's nothing really there, right? Here in Nashville, everyone's buzzing about Robert Woods. He's coming off an ACL surgery, and he's going to be a target for Ryan Tannehill this season, and he looks good. Okay, maybe that's something, because he's coming off an injury. How good? How effective? We don't know, because camp is not designed to really give you any indication of what the season's going to be like until you get it. And one other thing, we made a funny promo about this when I said that I don't like training camp, joint practices. I really don't like joint practices. I don't. I'm probably in the minority here on this opinion. I'm sure there are plenty of football people who go, no, there's a lot of value to joint practices.
I don't know about that. I'm with you.
I think there's a lot more people like me that goes, I don't know why in the heat of the summer you'd bring two teams in where you know they're going to be punching each other and
listen,
fighting.
We've only had like a couple of joint practices this year. The first story out was a big, you know, fight.
Yeah, Dallas and Denver got in a fight.
That's all that ever is. It's just two teams that are just, you know, full of testosterone, sweaty, tired, and one person even just looks at another person wrong. It's like, oh, let's throw the helmets at each other.
And
now
there's fights in training camp, but at least that's your teammate. You better be real careful.
And you can keep that quiet.
Yeah, you can keep that quiet. But why in the world would you not throw a punch at a rookie defensive end, if you're a veteran lineman who wants to, try to get a job, and he's taking advantage of you by doing some things he shouldn't be doing, right? You're going to throw up. Yeah, you're going to throw a haymaker at him. I feel like that's all that's good for. Now, look, Dan Campbell, he was quoted as saying, look, because they're doing a joint practice this week with Indianapolis. Dan Campbell said, okay, look, my starters can get up to 30 reps in a joint workout that they're not getting in the preseason game. So they're not going to get 30 snaps in a preseason game, but they can get in joint practice. I don't mean to argue with that. He's a better football guy than I will ever be by 1,000 miles, but I still don't see the true value of it. I still don't. Again, when people say they're going to run through their playbook, no, you're not. You're not going to run through your playbook. You're going to run through certain plays. You're going to run through your playbook. Are you crazy? You're going to run through certain things, but you're not going to go through everything. You're going to just get work in through against real competition, right? But offenses versus defenses can sort that all out. I just think you go to these things and it just always ends up in a big fight. And I never see what the point is, right? The real proof in the pudding is when we get to the first week of the season and how everything's going to flow. And then after that, you play the game, you watch the film, you make adjustments, you get ready for week two's opponent, and you go through the motions that way. But in the month of August, you're supposed to work out all the little rust and get in shape and all that other things. But my God, the idea that Aaron Rodgers struggled on practice 13 is news is just not news. And we may be looking to fill things to talk about when it comes to the NFL, but let's be realistic about what August is. It really, unless you're talking about season-ending injuries or injuries that keep a guy out for a while or whatever, it's not analysis by paralysis or whatever the term is. It's not that where we're like, we have to make a mountain out of a molehill. Like, we have to take this and make it bigger than what it is. It's not. I've been to 1,000 practices in the NFL, and I've never walked away feeling like I saw something that was a game changer.
So should we make a big stink or a big to-do over the Patriots struggles?
See, that's the thing. There might be a larger story there, though. Like, all right, who's going to call plays? But remember what I said when we talked about
it? Yeah, that's not actually about players trying to learn
right. Give
the program or new learn plays or anything like that. It's because there's no hierarchy or coaches in that
staff. I think to me, the story of that isn't so much the Patriots struggling offensively. It's that it's, all right, how much do we trust the Bill Parcells hierarchy? Like, how much do we trust Parcells that, not Parcells, Bill Belichick. Why did I say Parcells? Oh, yeah, because they're kind of connected. Sorry. Bill Belichick, how much do we trust that in the end, he's got it. Like, you go, well, I don't know. How did Matt Patricia and Joe Judge call plays? And you go, well, let me sit back and see how it plays out. Listen, I know if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm like, okay, can you just name one so I can calm down a little bit? Belichick's like, no, I'm not naming an offensive coordinator. Yeah, but no, just to make me feel better. Can you do that? Can I have someone to yell at on sports radio Monday morning when the team only manages 6 points on 2 field goals? Because I don't want to yell at Mac Jones all day, but can I have someone else in the department that I can yell at? And I think maybe Belichick is saying, yeah, there is me. You can yell at me. You can. I don't care.
Well, remember that his press conference from a few weeks ago when the reporter asked him, he was like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
You just want to know who's coaching. Don't worry about it.
There's two things with Belichick, man. He's either the smartest guy in the room or he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. But either one, that's all you're getting with him.
Yeah, and if he thinks he's the smartest, or if he's just thinking he's the smartest guy in the room, he has the best poker face in the world.
Without question. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this show hour, I should say, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. I am really, I got to tell you, I am curious about this Patrick Reed thing. I don't know why I'm so curious about it. But I feel like somebody pointed this out on Twitter. I think it was Amanda Rose, who covers golf. I think she pointed out, like, the most hated guy in golf did one of the, did a thing to guarantee he's going to be even more hated than he already is.
True.
You know what I mean? Like I just think that when you're an athlete, complaining about I even in golf, if you're an athlete and you complain, like, they boo me, who wants to hear an athlete? Who has sympathy for a professional athlete?
Yeah, but see, you know, I look at why am I forgetting his name? See, I can do that, right?
Right, of course, you can do that.
Bryson
right?
DeChambeau.
Bryson DeChambeau, yeah.
I don't know why I forgot his name. You know, we hate him. He bothers us because, you know, just the amount of, you know, arrogance that it comes with him, you know. Yeah. But at least we respect him as a golfer. Patrick Reed's different. I don't even think we respect him as a golfer.
That's the thing. Like I said earlier, if you get accused of cheating, it's like so much of your aura is taken away, right? It's so much of what you are is just stripped. And I think it's so important in that sport for integrity. I mean, because, again, have you ever seen a defensive back in the NFL, look at the referee and go, hey, I held him. I know you missed it. I held him. So throw a flag because that's pass interference. I know you didn't call it, but I was all over him. But in golf, they'll go up to an official and go, that ball moved. And they're like, we didn't see it. Yeah, I know, but I did. That ball moved. And Patrick Reed is like, yeah, you didn't see it, so I'm not going to tell you about it. And the only way you're going to find out about it is if there was a camera on it. So I'm hoping there wasn't a camera on it. And I think that's what rubs people the wrong way. But if this lawsuit goes through, my God, some people are going to be in trouble.